Cast your mind back to 1995. How many people here were born in 1995? Some of us. All right. There was the promise back then of the network computer, this thin client where you would have kind of a sort of something like a tablet or whatever, and it would do all of its compute out in the cloud, and there'd be compute on demand. You'd have all the power that you needed. Cast your mind forward to 2016. We've had the cloud idea for a long time now, but we've seen a sort of division between infrastructure and platform. With things like storage, we see something like a platform. We see this idea that you've got storage out in the cloud and it just works. You put stuff there, it stays there, life's good. But when it comes to compute, to being able to run up capacity on demand, we've been often more confined to a more infrastructural view. We were told, we were promised back in the good old days, that you would get compute like off the grid, like plugging your computer into the wall and compute would flow like electricity. Whereas actually it's more like you plug your computer in and it says, you can rent a wind turbine for the next 30 minutes. Well, that's nice because it means I can get as much as I want. I can rent as many wind turbines as I like. But I'm actually not interested in the business of running wind turbines. For Auckland people, that's, you may know it as solar power, but I'm from Wellington, so wind turbines. What we'd actually like to be able to do is to think about a platform. To be able to just say, I want to run a website, or a web service, or a mobile application backend, or an integration, or a bot, or whatever. And I don't want to have to manage fleets of VMs. Not my problem. That is the promise of the Azure App Service. Now, App Service has been around for a little while now, and it offers a bunch of capabilities for building applications that will work at scale. Four main pillars to date: web apps, mobile apps, logic apps, and API apps. Web apps, pretty much what you'd expect. This is the ability to build websites, interactive applications on the web, and have them scale out as required, using whatever platform you need, whatever language you need. Mobile applications, Vishesh has talked a little bit about this, building backends for things like push notifications and authentication, stuff like that. API apps for when you want to offer a service that can be consumed by a variety of clients. And logic applications for when you need to integrate your applications with existing platforms or with each other. And we provide a bunch of capabilities around that, not just the ability to develop, but also to connect, to monitor, to manage, to scale, to configure, all of those things that you would like to see in a platform as a service. With recent announcements, we've got some more stuff coming into view. Web apps previously were Windows-based. We are now going to offer those on Linux. We're offering containerization of web apps. Azure Functions have just gone GA, and I'll talk about those. And we've just introduced a bots as a service application. So what I'd like to do over the next 30 minutes is just take you through some of those, show you how they work, and then Emma from Intergen will talk about how they play out in the real world. So let's start by creating a web app. So we go into the Azure portal and we've got Web App on Linux preview. And as you're about to see, some of it is a bit previewy. This demo is not one of my more stable ones, I'm afraid, but let's see how it goes. AKL dev day web. And put that in the resource group because I always put things in resource groups. And I'm going to configure that as a Node 6.6 application. And that's now create. And that's now chuntering away, creating things. Now, that's going to take a little while to create, so I've just got one that's already up. Now, one of the considerations around this platform service is how do you actually get stuff onto it? Again, with VMs, you've got that kind of manual configuration step. With platform service, you don't really want to be worrying about that. You just want things to work. You want to be able to use them with your continuous integration situation. So if this one is up yet, yep. So if I dive into my web application, you can see I've got, it's going to create a initial application for me, which is not very exciting, but at least it does something. At least it's responding. So how do I get stuff in there? Deployment options. And look what I can do. I can have it deploy automatically from a GitHub repo. It's going to think about that for a while. It knows my credentials already, unless it's forgotten them, which it sometimes does, because online demos. So I can get my authorization. I can choose, if I'm a member of an organization, I can choose that platform, and then I'll just dive in and grab that project. Now, in this case, I've only got one branch, which is my master branch. This, again, gives us our staging capability. We can create a separate web application that maybe monitors another branch. But for this one, I'm just going to go, well, I'll use the master branch. Anytime I merge into the master branch, it's going to take my updates. So, okay, let's get that going. And because that can sometimes take a while, here's one I prepared earlier. And that is a web application running on Linux. That is a Node application. And it does the sort of useful functionality that everyone needs, which is to put pointless messages on cat GIFs. You guys all do that? You folks all do that? There we go. But let's have a look at what's actually happening here. So where's my form? There it is. If I go into my GitHub for Windows, I can see I've actually got some changes pending on this, because that I thought that make GIF was kind of a bit, as a Windows person, that's hard for me to understand. So I thought GIF me would be more effective. So use proper words. I'll commit that to master and push that up to GitHub. And if I go look at my deployments now, I'm afraid there's a lot of standing around in these demos. The network is a permanent curse. And that's just waiting for it to notice that has changed. So that's synced. Oh, we just need to do this manually. Come on, don't make me do this manually. I'll do this manually. There we go. It's now using the proper words. It's going to build that, and it's just pulling from GitHub across into that node.js website. There's a webhook set up, so it does do that automatically, but it just takes a little bit longer than I'm quite willing to stand around during a demo. And while that's going, we can keep a look at that deployment view. We can also have a look at the diagnostic console. So we can jump into the advanced tools. And this gives us a bit of information on the infrastructure backing it. So I can jump into a debug console for this, which is actually a bash console hosted in the browser. And you can see it's a full-on bash console and I can, for example, examine some of those diagnostic files. And we can go back and see how that deployment has been getting on. And let's try browsing that now. And you can see that that change has come through automatically. So that's pretty nice. We can use, we can deploy Linux applications on Linux. We can use Node or PHP or whatever. What if we want to use something else, something that's not been supported by the people behind Azure Web Apps? Well, something we announced just yesterday is we can now do containerization. So I can once again jump in here, go back to my resource group, and can once again add a web app on Linux. And now instead of configuring one of those built-in containers, I'm going to ask it to draw a container from Docker Hub. So let's get that going, and we'll have a look at what's in there. So this is a pretty simple application. In fact, it's an embarrassingly simple application. All it consists of is this configuration file, which is just a Ruby program that routes all requests to a very simple piece of text. So having created that, what's happening now is that container is being deployed from Docker Hub into Azure Web Applications. And once again, here's one I created earlier. And by Jove, it does indeed work. Once again, that is authentically running container, so I can, if I want to change that, and this is a comedy part of the presentation where you get to see me trying to use Vi. And I have a crib sheet for this, just in case, but let's improve again some of that wording to be proper, like the Queen uses. By the Lord Harry, Ruby from Docker works. Escape, :W:Q. This is the bit where I try to get out of Vi. Yes! That's the hardest bit. All right, and let's rebuild the Docker container. It's a good thing I have my cheat sheet. There we go. So this is just rebuilding that Docker image with the changes that I've made. I now need to push that to Docker Hub. Ruby hello 0.3 sudo docker log in. I know what's going on here. You either have too many passwords or too few passwords. And in this case, I have too few. All right, and sudo docker push. And if I now head over to my rather thinly populated Docker Hub repo and keep refreshing on that, and 0.3 now exists, so I can dive back into, dive back into here, go back to my Docker container, change that to 0.3, save the details, and that will now redeploy. That will now think about redeploying. Okay, now are we ready to go? Come on. Now, last minute, this has got a 503. No, it's not redeployed yet. There we go. By the Lord Harry, Ruby from Docker works. So now the Queen is safe. We have proper English on the page. So what have we seen here? We've seen that we can build web applications not only on Windows, but on Linux. We can use Node.js or PHP, but if we have something that's got a more customized requirement, we can fall back to Ruby or Python or whatever by using a containerized deployment and just run from a private Docker registry or from Docker Hub or whatever suits us. The other feature that I want to show you today is Azure Functions. And this to me is one of the things that really helps to crystallize that promise of scalable VM-less architecture. This is something called a serverless capability where there is you define a function, we give you an endpoint for it, and you can call that as you wish. It doesn't even need to be an endpoint, it can run on a trigger of any kind. So you don't need to worry about where it's located, or about managing the VMs for it, or anything like that. You've got a very simple onboarding experience, very simple management experience. So let's jump back to here, and create a function app. I'll create one of those. And when that comes up, we will be able to create a function. So that's just creating the underlying site. So let me take you back to one that I created earlier. And when we click the new function in this, you'll see we'll get a bunch of templates that we can use for standard capabilities. So new function. And we can get some of this, for example, a web trigger or a blob trigger or works off a queue or whatever. So in this case, I'm going to choose an HTTP trigger. I'll use C Sharp, though I can also use Node.js or whatever. We also have some more experimental offerings which can use other languages such as JavaScript or Batch. for those of you who want to write your Azure functions in .cmd files, power to you. But not so for me, so I'm not going to worry about authorization. We'll just make that anonymous. And we've got this C# code. We can edit this in the browser, and we can also test it in the browser. So for example, I can do a test. I'll use a HTTP GET. I'll add a parameter of name is Ivan, and then I can What's wrong with you? Oh dear, it's all gone pear-shaped. What are you objecting to? Nothing. All right, I will go back to my other thing then. So usually at this point, I would demonstrate the wonderful world of editing functions in the browser and committing them, testing them here. And you will be freaking out going, so what you're suggesting is that I ask my developers to edit C# code in the browser, in the live production environment. What are you smoking? Well, as always, I'm smoking GitHub. So what I can do instead is I can jump into my function application settings and I can configure continuous integration. And in this case, I've got this hooked up to a GitHub repo, in particular this GitHub repo, and I've got my code in here. It's just C# script files, and although I can now see those in the browser and I can test them in the browser, I can't edit them in the browser because that's insanely dangerous. But if I test this, I can go, let's do a GET, add a parameter of text, Ivan, and we run that, and we can see that we're getting logs down here of the function running and finishing, and we're also getting when we actually have enough space to see it, we're also getting the results here. Now, notice that at no point have I had to create a VM here. I've just been adding functions or deploying functions into this function application. Now, where might I actually call this from? Well, obviously with a function like this, where it's able to hurl insults at people, the obvious place to deploy it is on a team Slack. So how do I do that? Well, I can jump in here, I can grab this URL, and then I will go into our team Slack configuration. I will create a command. Add that, and I'll just paste that URL that I got from that function. I'll wait for caches to fill out. And who do I want to be? So that seems like an appropriate description of my boss. And no, he's going to have to look like a little command icon. Slack.com is not responding. That's fantastic. All right. Well, once again, it's a good thing I set things up earlier. So let's try this. Now, I know I'm going to get an error message for this one because, oh, the one time I expect things to fail. So you can see, you probably can't see, Slack has made a request to that URL. Slack has made a request to that URL. The Azure function has run, and we've got some text back, which is being presented. The functions we can run in Azure Functions are capable of doing pretty much anything. They are essentially .NET Core projects. So if I have a look at the repo, you can see that in this more sophisticated example, I can have a project.json which can bring in dependencies, and I can use hash-r directives just like in C# script, and I can do anything I need to. So in this example, I've got something which passes the text that I get from Slack into Bing Translate and just reads the response. This is all fairly low level. You can obviously put a nicer wrapper around this, but this will get the job done. So this is using Cognitive Services, or part of Cognitive Services. And Nigel Parker is going to show you a bit more integration this afternoon of text analysis with Azure Functions and using that in a bot. But this is just a very basic example. So when I run that, which is also hooked up to a slash command, I can slash Frenchify hello developer day, and with the awesome power of machine translation, it's going to time out. Bonjour, je n'ai des développeurs. Any French speakers in the audience? Anyone like to comment on that translation? Best not, eh? But it shows that we can at least get through. We can use those external services. We could do something like sentiment analysis, something like that. We can similarly hook that up to Twitter or to queues or whatever. We can do all of those things in Azure Functions. And something we've just recently announced is the ability to create a bot app using a template, which will actually automate a lot of that stuff for you. And that's not even going to come up now. Bot service, there we go. And this is very similar to a function app. Gives you some templates that are relevant to the bot environment. Just having to have a think about that. So what can we do with app services? Development we're all familiar with, but what the continuous integration stuff means is that we can use our familiar development tools, our development environments, and our development contexts such as GitHub or VSTS or whatever. We're not limited to particular tooling. We can use Node.js, we can use PHP, we can use C#, we can use .cmd files, we can use Ruby, whatever. We've got those integration capabilities via bot service, via functions being triggered by endpoints or queues or whatever, and via logic apps, which allows to integrate to Salesforce or to Office 365 or whatever. We can scale automatically, again, without worrying about managing fleets of VMs. We just say, here's our formula for scaling, want it based on CPU or a fixed amount or whatever, do it. And we've got monitoring via application insights and metrics and all those other good things.